It's time for us to begin. Last Wednesday, we had a class on bad examples of parents. So we're going to move on this morning to good examples of parents. Okay, I was mentioning like last Wednesday we went over a few examples of bad parents, and who remembers some of the parents we mentioned on Wednesday, last class session? What was that?
David.
Yeah, okay, we went over David and we looked at three instances of David's children. Okay, who else did we look at on Wednesday? Okay, I mentioned Adam and Eve. Okay. Do you remember some of the children of David that I mentioned on Wednesday?
Absalom.
One of them was Absalom, yes. What was the other one's name?
Amnon.
Correct, I mentioned Amnon, although we don't linger too much on Amnon, but on Absalom. But yes, I mentioned Amnon. Which other child from David we mentioned?
Solomon.
We mentioned Solomon. And here's the... Who remembers the other one I mentioned? Remember another one, like Absalom, who wanted to be king? This time he didn't. Absalom wanted to supplant his father, but Adonijah wanted to supplant Solomon, okay? And we look at those examples, and also, of course, at Solomon, okay? I was going to mention, we mentioned briefly Noah and one of his sons, okay? Also, I was going to mention Eli and Ophni and Phinehas, his children, two children. We're not going to stop there and consider that because we're going to move on to other examples. Do you remember King Saul? King Saul tried to use his children in order to defeat David. Okay, you're speaking an example in a way of bad parenting because he's trying to use, you know, he gave one of his daughters to David, okay? He was finding a way to trap him, and then also he tried to use Jonathan, his son, to catch David, okay? So we have an example there on Saul of issues in parenting or maybe a bad focus. We also talk about examples, how examples are strong. Okay, if you're a godly parent, you have a good example set up. There's a strong pull towards following that example. If you're a bad parent, there's also a strong push or pull towards being a bad parent. Okay, now we saw Abraham and Isaac. We saw an example there. We see in the Bible how Abraham lied and Isaac just did the same thing later on in the same place, under the same circumstances. Okay. Also, for instance, we mention Solomon and Rehoboam. Okay, how Rehoboam, Solomon's son, he also, in the example of Rehoboam, we see the attitude, not being authoritative, but being authoritarian in Rehoboam, because he said, I'm not going to lower the yoke my father had in you, okay? The little finger of my father is nothing, okay? If he whipped you with whips, I'm going to whip you with scorpions. You see, authoritarian. See, that's an attitude that some parents take, authoritarian. I'm going to do this no matter what, okay? I'm going to be harder on you no matter what happens. And you're not going to question my authority. I'm not going to hear your comments. Okay? So that's a type of parenting as an example there. And I wanted to finish mentioning favoritism. Okay? Is there favoritism in the Bible? I think favoritism is an issue nowadays when there are several children. Okay? If you have an only child, then that's fine. That can be your favorite child. Like, for instance, I have a favorite mother-in-law. Okay? She's my favorite for mother-in-law, and I expect her to call me the same way, favorite son-in-law, I hope. But I just speak on her. I know she cannot do that, okay? But I can, so I have the privilege, okay? But Did Jacob have a favorite son? Jacob or Israel? Did he have a favorite son? Okay, did that cause trouble in the family? It did, it sure did. Okay? He had Joseph as his favorite child. And growing up being compared, I think it's not fair for children. Or growing up feeling like there's another one who is better than you or more important than you. Of course, the Old Testament mentions some privileges for the oldest child, okay? That doesn't mean they were favored. That's just what the law was, okay? I was talking to a lady, and she said that that her second daughter, when she grew up, she said, Mom, they got in this conversation. And they said, Mom, growing up, I really didn't feel really that good. I said, how come? What happened? Well, because my sister, you used to call her, come on, buddy. And you never call me your buddy. I thought that she was only your buddy and not me. You see, all of these years, that just simple phrase got a toll on her. Because she felt that she was disfavored in the eyes of her mom. Okay? As opposed to her older sister. So we see favoritism. And we know from God, God is not a respecter of person. There's no favoritism in God. Okay, he chose a nation because that's the way the Messiah will come, by the Israelites. But now, no longer there isn't a chosen nation anymore once the fulfillment of time came. Okay, every nation is the same in God's eyes. And now when we think about Muslims, and I'm free, I mean, I feel it's easy for me to talk about this topic because it's not too much of an issue with me, I mean, or a delicate topic, I would say. But the problem with that nation is that they have a false revelation. That's all. It's no wrong with having long beards or so on, or speaking Arabic. There's nothing wrong about it. It's just that they happen to have been fooled by a false prophet. That's all. Okay? Just like India is fooled by many gods. Okay? Same thing. So it's another nation. Okay, just like probably Mexico is being fooled by a lot of Catholicism. Just the same thing. There's no respect of persons in the eyes of God. So he loves the Muslim, he loves the Hindu, or the Indian, or Hindu, either way. I call them Indians because that's what they are. Hindu is more the religion, but Hindus, or anywhere in the world. Anyways, favoritism hurts families. That's the point. Okay, favoritism hurts families. Anyways, but let's go to some examples of good parents. Okay, I have some good examples, and if you have any input, you're welcome to say something. But the first example I have here is in the first book of Samuel, and I think you know which parents I'm talking about. Okay, this is in the book of 1 Samuel. We have these men, Elkanah and Hannah. Okay. I know there's a few things we can learn from them. But the first thing we learn is that Hannah could not bear children. Okay? She could not have children. And that was an issue. If you go to the first chapter of Luke, and we're gonna talk about Elizabeth. But Elizabeth called being barren a reproach. Okay? A shameful thing. An embarrassing thing. Nothing you will proud talk about in a conversation. You know, here's my wife. By the way, she can't have children. Okay? That's what she called, and that's what it meant to them, a reproach. Okay? So this is important because it plays an important role, okay, on this lesson we see. Okay, now notice she had no children. Let's see, I'm in chapter 1 and verse 2, at the end of verse 2. Notice the contrast made here. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Okay? And not only that, but Peninnah, not only did Hannah had no children, but Peninnah bullied her, made fun of her, or picked on her on purpose, especially on these times of the feast when they traveled together to Shiloh, to the house of the Lord. And then the book of Samuel makes it explicitly clear how Hannah felt about it. It's just impressive how many synonyms, or different, about five or six synonyms, different synonyms, to convey how she felt. Wants us to know that this wasn't an easy thing for her, okay, to be barren, have no children, and especially to be picked on by the other wife of Elkanah, okay? Now, let me see. She had no children. Let me see what I highlighted here. Now, notice in verse 3, this man went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts of Shiloh. You see, this decision Anna is going to make and Elkanah are going to make, these are two godly parents. Not only Anna believes in Jehovah, okay, but the head of the house, he went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice the Lord of hosts. So this man, he took the leadership. Okay, notice now in verse 4. And whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he will give portions to Penina, his wife, and to all, notice, and to all her sons and daughters. So Penina, or Penina, either way, or she had a lot, she had sons and daughters, okay? Anna had none. But then verse 5, but to Hannah he will give double portion. And here's the first point I want to mention. I don't want to skip this. I don't want to read through this. Notice to this. He will give portions, verse 5, but to Hannah he will give a double portion for what? Because he loved her. I love you. And good parenting starts way before children are born. See, she's barren, but he loves her. That's the background for a good parenting. Good mom, good dad, they both love each other. Mom respects the husband. Dad loves the wife, sacrifices for her, provides physically, spiritually. You see here, he's providing physically, and he's providing spiritually for his family. Okay, and he's also providing emotionally by loving her. See, this man, he's a godly man in what he's doing. You know, the Bible doesn't endorse multiplicity of wives. He tolerated it in this time, but God doesn't command it. Okay? Just to make a side note. But good parenting starts way before children are born with a committed husband and wife. Okay? Many children suffer and they grow up because there is not a foundation in which they are born. Some of them are born in broken homes. Some of them are born single moms or different types of shapes. And there is not a foundation of a family for them to grow, to develop, an example to follow, what to do, how to make decisions, who's going to guide them, and so on and so forth. Okay, so we see this very important point. He loved Hannah, despite the fact that the Lord had closed his womb. It makes me think of a friend from college, and he got married before I did. And, you know, they were young, both of them really skinny, both of them really lively, whatever you can call it, you know, from college, right after college they got married. But soon after they got married, she developed this disease on the... She gained weight so much by disease. By the time I saw them again, she looked very different than when she got married. Very different. And he and I were close, we're good friends. And then he told me, no, Raphael, she developed this and she has changed physically. But my love for her has not changed at all. In fact, it's grown. Because I love her, not because of the way she looks. Okay, and more importantly, even if it, because it's a sickness that she can't control. Okay, so he loved her despite the Lord had closed her womb. Okay, so we see they're complete. So far they're complete. When mom and dad, they know they're complete with each other and they love each other and they have a good marriage, a marriage centered in God. Now children are ready to come anytime. Some ask me, oh, when is a good time? When is a good time for children to be born? When I finish my degree, when I finish this and that, when I finish my master's degree, when I get ascended, or when I get this job, this dream. You have a mom and dad who love each other, that's the best time. Okay? Doesn't matter when. Things will accommodate, okay, for that child. But anyways. Okay, let me continue, because I have several examples. Now verse 6, And her rival also provoked her severely, verse 6, to make her miserable. You see, the purpose was to make her miserable. She was jealous of her because the Lord had closed her womb. Okay? Now, before I leave this example, in verse 7, so it was year by year when she went up to the house of the Lord. Notice again that she provoked her. Therefore, here's the first description of how she felt. She wept and did not eat. Okay? Because this affliction. I mean, verse 7. Alright? Now, in verse 9, she begins to pray. And verse 9, notice verse 10. Another description of how she felt. And she was in bitterness of soul. It wasn't enough to say she wept. Wasn't enough to say she lost her appetite. Now, she's described as being bitter in soul. And then notice, and prayed to the Lord, and what? And wept in anguish. Another point to make it clear, you know how she felt. Okay, it's impossible for me to understand how she felt. But I'm getting an idea, because I've never been in that situation. But I'm getting an idea by these words. I'm trying to draw from experiences that might be similar to her, not equal, to help me understand. And then, verse 11, then she made a vow and said, notice, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction, again, affliction of your maidservant, and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child. Very interesting how she asked for a boy. Of course, she couldn't be able to give him to the services. He wasn't a boy. So she's asking a male child. Then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor should come upon his head. See the heart of Hannah, okay? How she felt and the promise she made by her request. Okay? Now we see that she continued to pray, and Eli, she thought that she was drunk. Notice verse 15. But Hannah answered and said, no, my Lord, I am a woman. Now notice this. Of sorrowful spirit, okay? If we were learning Hebrew, we got to hear a host vocabulary of how someone feels when he or she is in anguish. You see, it's using different words every time. Now she's sorrowful in spirit. I haven't drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but I have poured out my soul before the Lord. Okay? Now it is verse 16. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief, I have spoken until now. So it was a real reproach. She's feeling bad, and on top of this rival of her is making her feel miserable. Okay, and sure she is. Now we know the story. The boy is born. They go back, and like everything, they go back. And they continue their married life, Elkanah and Hannah. He's not despising her physically because she cannot conceive. Say, well, I'm not going to be with you because you cannot conceive. It's a waste of time. No. Go back. Things use normal course. And she conceives. Okay? The Lord answered the prayer. And notice, and she named him Samuel. Okay? Because the Lord, I'm in verse 20. Samuel, because I have asked him from the Lord. You know, this word Shemuel in the Hebrew, Shemuel. You remember the word, Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the God is one. That's the word Shema. Okay, hear. Take heed. Shema. This is it's the same word, Shemuel. In other words, El hears, or El, which is God, takes heed. Okay, Shemuel. Okay, because I have asked him of the Lord. Okay, and he heard. So we learned this dedication. So when he's born, he is going to dedicate him to the Lord. Verse 27, and I'm going to finish here. For this child I pray, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I ask of him. Therefore, I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. Okay, great example of dedication. She is fulfilling her word, and she's dedicating her son to the Lord. Now, the Lord blessed her with more sons and daughters after Samuel, okay? And so she is giving him back to the Lord to work with Eli, the priest, at that time. So we see an example of dedication, dedicating your children, okay? Every child is God-given, okay? Every child, we ask God for him or her. It's God-given. We take it for granted. Anna did not take it for granted, okay? But there's no difference from the child he gave her to the child he gives us, the children he gives us. No difference. Same way. Okay, in her case, there was a miracle to open her womb, okay? But after that, it's just providential. The womb was there. Everything was there. It was just a miracle to open her womb. And every child we get is from God as well. Okay, it's a Shemuel. It's a children we ask of God. And God takes heed of our petition. Any comment here on Hannah? Yes, please.
I would like to mention that this story and others similar to this with the two wives is a good example for us today to understand children that are born out of wedlock or children that are born into a blended family. Some of us don't have that experience, so we don't understand it. But if you can understand a family that has, because a man can have a child by another woman prior to getting married, and a man can have children by other women. And when those families come together, it is a similar thing. There is another woman that is involved in your marriage because there's a child that is involved in that marriage. Or there's another woman that is involved for other reasons. Sin produces what it does. But I do think we need to have an understanding, because parents that are trying to raise children in these situations need help.
Mm-hmm.
They understand it's difficult. They understand that, you know, sin was involved in whatever the situation, but they still need help. And so this gives a better understanding for people that are trying to help families in this situation of how the situation is and what actually goes on, because it does open the door to understanding. And we do need to have an understanding so we can help, because the children are being brought up in this, and they are going to need all the help they can get in order for them to be able to recover and live very victorious lives in Christ as a result. And so we may not understand the multiple wives situation because we don't have that and it's not authorized, but can we not understand that this is the same type of situation when a blended family exists?
Very good point. Thank you for mentioning. Yes, and I like what you mentioned, that they can still be victorious, yeah, even in that situation. It's not easy, and a lot of us, maybe we have not been through it, but it's not easy. They can still be victorious. They can please the Lord.
Yes.
Even though in that situation, but we need to be able to help families going through that. For example, we know children that are in a blended family. You know, mom married someone else, and now I am going to live with stepchildren or stepbrothers and sisters. And some of them don't feel too comfortable there because the treatment might not be the same, okay, and things like that. So there's some challenges that we might learn from to be able to help those going through it. Thank you. Yes, very good. Excellent. Next example. It's in the book of Exodus, okay, and we have two Levite husband and wives, okay. And in the book of Exodus, both descendants of Aaron, in chapter 1, Exodus 1, okay, here we have an example again of a mom and a dad, okay, who protected their child. Okay, in the context, in chapter 1, we're going to see here that the Israelites are growing and growing to the point that the Egyptians, they were worried. It's very interesting how the Egyptians were worried about the Israelites. And you know why? Because they didn't mingle with the gods of the Egyptians. There was a very sharp difference between them. Had they began to worship the idols of the Egyptians and so on and mingle with them, then there's no problem. Now you are my nation. We're one nation. But that's the something to highlight. The Egyptians were worried because Israelites were different. They were worshiping only one God in comparison to the Egyptians, okay? So they were afraid, so there's a decree, okay? Pharaoh, okay, asks that the midwives of the Hebrews, that they get rid of the male child, okay? Get rid of them. But they see from Phua, these two midwives, they say, well, that's not right in the eyes of God, so we're not going to do it. Okay, so God blessed them for their attitude. They respected life. Okay, they could have complied with the request, but they did not, in honor of God's view of life or sanctity of life. So then we go to chapter 2, Exodus 2, And then a man of the house of Levi, okay, went and took his wife and daughter as a wife, a daughter of Levi as well. Okay, so we know later that this woman is named, the man is named Amram, and the woman is named Jochebed. Okay, I don't know if you met a Jochebed here in the States, but I know one in Mexico, Jochebed. There's a sister, and her name is Jochebed. Okay, it's not very popular. I mean, very common to hear someone named like that, but I've seen one in person. Okay, not the mother of Moses, though, but I've seen one. I know one in person. Okay, but in verse 2, so the woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid them 3 months. Okay, so she hid them. In this moment, when babies were getting thrown out of the into the Nile River, when male child were being killed, she said, "No, I'm going to hold on to mine, and I'm going to keep him. I'm going to hide him." Okay, from these dangers. But in verse 3, he grew up enough that she could not longer hide him. So she took an ark of, made an ark, this nest, and then put asphalt and pitch on it so that it would not sink, and put the child and laid it in the reeds by the riverbank. Okay? So she's doing all she can. She's doing all she can to protect her child. Nowadays, some women try to do all they can to get rid of the child. You see? The opposite attitude. Okay? And this is what pleases God. She didn't know that she just conceived and was hiding and was protecting one of the greatest men in the history of Israel. Okay? Which is Moses. Alright? And so she hid him, and we know the story. Her sister Miriam stood afar off, and she was watching what's going to happen of this child in the basket. And we see the daughter of Pharaoh saw him, brought it to her, and then the Moses' sister asked her if she wanted a nurse made for him, and she said, "Yeah, please go get one, and I will pay her in order for her to raise Moses." So she goes and gets Jochebed, and Jochebed gets to raise Moses for a living, and then she gets paid for doing so. So you see, God recompenses her for her desire to protect, okay, and then sacrifice herself for her child, for her son, okay. So she hid him. Do you remember another boy that was hid in the Old Testament? This is not the only one that was hid. There was another young boy. He was hid. He was hid for 6 years. And you remember where he was hidden?
He was in Jerusalem. He was one of the kings.
Correct. He was correct. Yes. Okay. His name was Joas. Okay. So what happened is Joas's father gets killed, and Joas's grandmother, she kills all her grandchildren, all those who can aspire to the throne. But then Joas gets hidden. Okay, in the house of the Lord for 6 years. Okay, so after 6 years, he's produced, or he's taken out of his hiding place, and then he becomes a king of Judah. Okay, but very interesting, this grandmother killed all her grandchildren, okay, who could aspire to the throne. Okay, so that's another side note of another child that was hidden. But going back to Jochebed, okay, if she saw one door closed, she looked for another door of opportunity. If babies weren't being killed, okay, she said, "I'm going to hide him." If she can no longer hide him, now she said, "Well, I'm going to put him in a basket." Okay? And you see, she's doing all she can to protect the life of her son. Okay? So like Jochebed, parents also should be determined, should know what we want to do, should be determined, make our mind beforehand, how we're going to treat them, how are we going to protect them. Okay? So, again, parenting doesn't happen by chance. It takes sacrifice. It takes effort. It takes work. If I sit down and let things happen, well, they're going to take my child and they're going to kill him if I don't hide him. Okay? If I don't put him on the basket, someone is going to come and hear him cry. I'm going to get him and they're going to kill him. I cannot just sit down and just let life be and let someone else decide for me as a mom and dad. I need to take proactive action to be intentional. Okay, another parent that I want to mention is, of course, in the book of Job. And I mentioned it before, and you know, but I just want to read a verse there in Job. Job chapter 1. And Job was concerned about the spiritual welfare of his children. Okay, he was a spiritual leader as well. Okay, now in Job, verse 2, we learn that he had 7 sons and 3 daughters. Okay? You know, sadly, they died. But then God gave him another 7 sons and another 3 daughters. Okay? To the point that he had doubled what he had at the beginning. All right, now verse 5. So it was when the days of feasting had run their course that Job would send and sanctify them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did regularly. Okay, so this is the patriarchal age. This is his responsibility. This is the only one he could have done it. Job, for his family. We learn at the end of Job that he also made sacrifices for his friends. Okay? Because this is the patriarchal age. There's the head of the family chosen to represent the whole family. So he's a spiritual leader. He was worried about the spiritual welfare of his children. But not only that, he will make his priority early in the morning. First thing, like we say, to make sure they are at peace with God. That was his priority, okay? Their spiritual welfare. And not only did he make it a priority, that was his habit. He made those regularly. That was his habit. I wouldn't imagine he, one day he said, "Oh, I forgot to offer sacrifices for my family. I just forgot about it. I was so busy here with the cattle, here with the camels. I was so busy in my business, I just don't have time for them. Let them do it themselves." No, thus he did regularly. He put his family on top of everything he had. Okay? So we see here how the scripture highlights his care for his family, his children and daughters, his sons and daughters. Okay, Job. Let's go to another one. In I wanted to mention, touch on Samson's parents, but I'm gonna skip to Luke chapter 1. In Luke chapter 1, we find a fine example of good parents. You see, we often talk about John the Baptist, and you remember Jesus said of men born of woman, there isn't one greater than John the Baptist. Okay? You see, he was a very important and key and fundamental minister and preacher. Okay, he spoke and he softened, he prepared the way, the hearts of the people before Jesus came, right after him. By the time Jesus came, they had been hearing John preach for a few months. He's been preaching before Christ. He's opening the ground. He's making a pathway where there is no pathway. He has a hard job. And now he also came in the spirit of Elijah, although he didn't perform any miracles. He also tells us that Elijah's work was not just miracles, was a lot of preaching, like John did. Okay? So John came in the spirit of Elijah, but to raise a godly son like John, who would say, "Yes, I'm gonna follow the Lord. I'm not gonna flee to Tarsus. I'm not gonna look for Baal. I'm not gonna look for Astaroth or other gods. I'm gonna stick to what God's telling me." It takes godly parents. Okay? It does. And we see here, and then Luke gives us an idea here on Luke chapter 1, verse 6. "And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless." You see, good parents, godly parents, have a greater chance, or rather, a greater opportunity for their children to follow their example. Okay? But we're ungodly. Well, the chances are that they're also going to follow our example if we're ungodly, like a lot of the kings did, following their, although that's not always the case. There's ungodly parents, okay, like Manasseh, the grandson of King Josiah. He was one of the most evil kings, but then Josiah, his grandson, turned to be a great king, okay? Any comments so far here? Okay, no comments. Oh, very good. Okay. I'm just going to mention a few verses. I don't want to stop too long. But notice in verse 13, Luke 1:13, and the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zacharias, for your prayer is heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you shall call his name John." Whether Zacharias prayed, "Lord, I want a child." Remember, Elizabeth was barren, like Hannah was. Whether he was praying directly, "Lord, I want a son," whether God knew that was his desire, we're not told. Most likely, common sense tells us that they would have been praying for a son or for a child. Okay, they wanted a child, just like Hannah did. So he's told, "I have heard your prayer, and your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you shall call his name John." Okay, now we see the rest of the story. He goes back in the temple, and then Zechariah asks, "How can I know this? She's old." Whether then Gabriel told him, "You're going to be mute until these things are fulfilled." Okay, both as a punishment and as a sign that this is from God. Okay, now verse 25. "Thus the Lord has dealt with me in the days when he looked on me to take away my reproach among my people." This is Elizabeth talking, okay? "The Lord has given me John. He has dealt with me. He has done what he has done with me. And he has taken away my reproach from among the people." Okay? And then we have a parenthesis there on Mary. I don't want to touch on Mary, but there's words of Elizabeth on verse 45 when she said, "Blessed is she who believed, for there will be a fulfillment of those things which were told of her from the Lord." So we learn here in Zechariah, again, successful parenting starts before children are born. If you say, "Well, I'm going to start working on being a parent once I have a child. I don't have a child, I don't need to work on it." It doesn't work like that. You become a good parent when you get married, and as many years as you are without a child, you work on your marriage, and then your child is born, and they see that mom and dad practice what they are teaching in Sunday school or listen to the worship service and the sermon. They practice it at home. See, and this is not something to say, "Okay, we have a child, we need to practice, start practicing what we hear from now on back home." No, this begins from the time you're married, even from the time before you get married. And then you can become a good parent, okay, when you are a sincere and what is the word? I forgot this word. You just keep in mind. But you're sincere and honest. That's another word. Anyways, but it begins before. Okay? Any comments right here on Elizabeth and Zechariah? Okay, you see, they were righteous before God. Let's go there. Since we're in Luke, let's go to Luke chapter 1. And then notice in verse 26. And I'm going to use, maybe this is my last example before we run out of time. Okay? But we see, when there is a hard task to take, you look for people who are capable for the task. Okay? Now, I couldn't imagine being a parent is a hard task. But imagine being the parent of the Son of God. You see the responsibility? Do you see the effort? You know, see the godliness you need to have to be able to raise God's Son in the flesh, okay? And there we have in Luke chapter 1, verse 28. "And having come in, the angel said to Mary, 'Rejoice.'" Why? "Because you are highly favored, one. The Lord is with you. Blessed are you among the women." Why is she blessed? Because the Lord chose her. Because she's a godly mother. And the Lord is saying, "I can trust you. And I can trust Joseph. You're going to guide Jesus' boy, lead Jesus' baby, boy, teenager, until he becomes adult. You're going to guide him in the law of the Lord. You're going to protect him. You're going to teach him a trade." I love how Joseph is called a carpenter and how Jesus also references as a carpenter. Okay, Jesus being the creator of the universe. I imagine he can make a table out of nothing, just like that. But knowing how to cut the wood, knowing how to measure, sweating for it, I think it's something new for him. Something he had to learn. Something he needed a father to guide him in this trade. So he became a carpenter. Okay? Because he had a godly father. They were chosen. Both of them were special. Both Joseph and Mary. Okay? You know, Joseph was a mature and thoughtful man. When he learned of Mary, what happened, he thought about it in a mature way. He didn't just react. He didn't just get upset. He thought about it and reflecting upon it. Okay? And then Matthew chapter 1 tells us that he was a just man. Now, Joseph being a just man, okay, he didn't want to put her away, but was minded to put her away privily. Okay? And then he was also a compassionate and a loving father. You know, he was willing to make it a secret what had happened for his love for Mary. You see, a good father. It starts before the child is born. Okay? So he did not linger in self-pity. Many of us, something happened to him. Oh, I'm so bad. I'm so ugly. I'm so this and that. I'm not good for nothing. And we stay in self-pity. And we can stay there for weeks and months. But Joseph said, well, this happened to me. She betrayed me for someone else. I'm not going to linger in self-pity. I'm going to move on. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to do it in a correct way because I love her. Okay? And he didn't retaliate. Try to get vengeance. Okay? As a solution for what happened. Okay? And then he was a brave man also. He was a leader of his family. You know, Herod wanted to kill children, so he flees to Egypt. Okay? Takes his family right away to protect them. He's a protector. He's a brave man. He won't hesitate to make decisions that are going to protect his family. You see, good parents. Both of them were privileged by being chosen by God for the task. They were parents fit for the task. Now, are we parents fit for the task? I know a lot of you are empty nesters long, long ago, and I'm grateful that you cut me some slack because I know you know more than I do when it comes to parenting. You have more experience than I do. I'm just drawing an example from the Bible, from what I read, and from some of my small experience, okay? I haven't had teenagers. I haven't had those issues. But, you know, teenager years, what I know is they are like it's just a stage. Okay, like when children grow, you know, they have growth spurts as they're growing. When a teenager is another growth spurt, okay? And there's things that come in teenage years. Doesn't mean that my teenage boy is hopeless. Doesn't mean that my teenage boy is beyond any help. Let him just be, do whatever he wants to do, messy room, all the walls painted, and he won't wash, he won't take a shower. Just let him be. No, this is a stage. Just like from 1 to 2 is another stage. Okay, children go to the terrible twos. That's a stage. We won't give up on them and on the terrible twos. We shouldn't give up on them on teenager years. It's just something normal they go through. Okay, and a lot of us or you might be glad after you left the teenage years because there are some rough times. But it's just part of life. Okay, so we don't need to give up on them on those years. Okay, so we see also that Joseph was a spiritual leader that went to the feast every year to Jerusalem, okay? And they circumcised Jesus. They paid the price for his redemption, you know, according to the law of Moses. And so they're parents fit for the task, okay? And being parent, as I mentioned before, is a full-time job, okay? Being a husband is a full-time job. Being a wife is a full-time job, okay? And being a parent is a full-time job as well. Okay? And then if you're married and you have children, then you have 2 full-time jobs besides the full-time job that you already have. Okay? So it's busy. It's busy. It gets busy. Children grow fast. And before you know it, they're grown. Okay? And they're out of the home. All right? That's why I like to be mindful of my time in social media, because I have 2 boys. They're growing fast. Social media is going to stay there forever, or who knows, until the earth stands. My boats are going to be moving along, and they're growing. Okay? From 10 years afterwards, I'm going to see social media is going to be the same thing, just fake news and things like that, and just a lot of time spent. But my boys' time is worth more than anything else. Thank you for your attention.